My name is Katie Gordon. I am 26 years old. Today is... I always do that. Today is May 15th, 2017, and I'm speaking with Sister Lucianne Sears, who is a Dominican sister here in Grand Rapids, and we are recording it at the Dominican Center in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So, Sister Lucianne, we've gotten to know each other through the Dominican Center and through interfaith events here in Grand Rapids, but we've also gotten to know each other outside of those spaces as well. But where does your spiritual journey start as a Dominican sister, maybe?
Well, it started before I was a Dominican sister, and I was schooled in Saginaw at St. Mary's Cathedral School, and was taught by the Dominican sisters. So early on, through religion classes and just being with the sisters, I think my understanding of spirituality or the presence of God was pretty early in my life. And that was nurtured all through grade school. I came to Grand Rapids as a freshman, and I attended Marywood Academy. At that time, we had aspirants of young women that were interested in religious life, and that was really powerful for me. I always stayed close to my family, but being on campus here, we were just with the sisters, and we were taught to meditate. Every morning we prayed. We went to Mass, but before that we had meditation, and that just really prepared me. So when I entered religious life in 1967 after high school, that was just, it just fit. And so, not to say that I haven't gone through struggles and disbeliefs and all of that. It's not just a really nice ride, but as I grew and understood, you know, some of the hypocrisies that go on in the church and then working in the church, I had real struggles of disbelief. Is there really a God? And I think we all have to go through that at some point. But it was, you know, those powerful experiences of struggle and questioning really continue to allow me to have a deep relationship with God.
Do you remember the moment that you decided that, you know, this is the path that I want to take?
It was pretty early, and I probably was in second grade or so, and I told my mom, I want to be a sister and a mother. And then she didn't go into any detail, and she said, well, you will see. We'll see just how that is. So, but I was really attracted to the religious life just because the women I was taught with, taught by, really had a joyful spirit, and we lived on the same block as the sisters did, so the sisters would walk around after supper on their evening walks and would stop and talk with us, so it was just a real close relationship growing up. So I just wanted to be a sister, and, you know, for the most part, maybe on a really, really bad day, maybe happened a couple times in my life, it's like, ugh, is this really right? But it seems to be right. It fits.
So how long have you been a sister now then?
49 and a half years.
Oh, so you're celebrating
Jubilee.
This year?
My class is starting right after the group ahead of us finishes about August 8th. And so we're going to celebrate the whole year, but we'll celebrate with the congregation next August.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But it doesn't seem like 50 years.
Yeah. So what's it, I mean, being a part of an institution for 50 years, you've probably seen it grow both within a more local context, but also on the global scale. What's that been like to see?
Oh, well, as a member of the Dominican Order, which is worldwide, both men and women, priests, brothers, sisters who are cloistered, as well as the Apostolic Sisters, and now we have a real strong associate program. Mm-hmm. But we also had what we called the Third Order. It's really stretching, and probably about 20-some years ago, I started working nationally and then internationally, and met many, many women and men who were Dominicans from different parts of the world. So it's really a privilege because we have a broad, simple charism of preaching and a long, long history. We're just finished celebrating our 800-year anniversary. So through thick and thin, the Dominican Order has remained. We have a great history of saints. We have some dark history of the Inquisition and how we worked our way out of that. Multiple personalities here in the United States, but we have a few from different parts of the world. Dominican artists get together, share our art, work together. So it's just, it's very diverse, but our focus is common, that we preach truth in many, many different ways. So I've stayed with folks in Belgium who are Dominicans. That was an inner community of men and women. Dominicans in Slovakia and Hungary, and known people from England and Canada. A wonderful experience.
So it's a global, there's a sense of the global community.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What's it, how would you describe the local Dominican community in Grand Rapids, the Dominican Sisters of Grand Rapids?
We've been here, I think, over 125 years. I think we came to Traverse City in over 135 years ago from New York. And we first established a school in Traverse City, and then one of the bishops called us down to Grand Rapids to start an orphanage because nobody was really doing ministry with the orphans. And so we started St. John's Home, and right next to that was St. Alphonsus School. So that was our first mission. And so we've been here a long, long time. We established lots of schools here in the city. And in order for us to be teachers, we needed education. So we started Aquinas College, which started out as Sacred Heart Academy, and then Catholic Junior College, and eventually became Aquinas College. So, and it was initially to educate the sisters. And then from there, it was the first Catholic, co-ed Catholic college in the country.
Wow. I had no idea.
Most religious orders set up their colleges to be, you know, just women's colleges. And we decided early on that it would be a co-ed college. So that, you know, has really helped us to not just be present to a wider population, but mixing men and women really do give us a wholesome focus and ability to be aware of issues, you know, through the many generations of what's going on in our world, and to have conversations about those.
Yeah. So I've lived in Grand Rapids for 3.5 years, and I feel like all the time I'm discovering new things that the Dominicans kind of had their hands in creating throughout the city. Aquinas College, obviously, St. John's, I know now. But Granville Center for Arts and Humanities.
Right. Yes, that's one of our legacies as well.
Yeah, and so it's just, it's incredible to see those little signs in these nonprofits that, you know, sister, whoever helped start this. But then I also meet so many organizers or activists in the city who have their own stories of engaging with the sisters throughout their lives of advocacy. So it seems like, I mean, I think that I'm one of the reasons I'm drawn to the Dominican Center is because the way that the sisters live out their faith in action and live out their values in the community that they're a part of is just so inherent in the tradition. And I mean, it kind of like what you were saying earlier, on the surface you can notice the hypocrisy of institutions oftentimes, but when you get to the local level you see how people are really living it out in authentic ways. So I think the Dominican Center is a great example of that for our community in Grand Rapids.
Well, I think our Dominican Center is celebrating its 25th year this year. And at the time we closed our academy because it was getting fewer and fewer students. It was a girls' academy for high school. It was an elementary school for both boys and girls. But I think for many families, they really felt that young women should grow up with both the influence of men and women. But I have to say that being a Marywood alum graduate, it was just a wonderful experience of creativity and challenge and assisting all of us to be leaders at a very young age. It was very nurturing, so I have no regrets for that. Yeah. The other thing about our presence here, a Dominican Center is one of them, and when we really were discerning what would be something that we can contribute in Western Michigan that would reflect our values and assist people. And it was really spirituality is looking at who we are as human persons and making that huge connection with the presence of God. And so we really started it. It started with courses, you know, assisting people to get their degrees or certificates in spiritual direction, plus a few other programs, and then it expanded to look at health and well-being as essential for spirituality. And then we added justice. That's a new one, really, you know, adding programs for justice, looking at our world. And then maybe 8 or 10 years ago, we added a conference center so people could use our facility and you know, have the atmosphere of privacy and quiet and on the campus, you know, using our land as part of that meditative process. And and then, you know, we have, as you know, some very good chefs here that the food is always good, so we're really happy to do that as well.
So I know that coming up this summer, you're teaching an ongoing course on that intersection of spirituality and social justice. So these two different kind of aspects of the faith and of the Dominican tradition, but how they overlap and reinforce each other. Can you share how you talk about that intersection of spirituality and social justice?
Yes, and I'll tell you how I got there too, because this course is going to take a look at who we are in the world as American citizens. You know, lots of us are middle class, upper middle class, you know, and how we function in the world compared to everybody else. And looking at how the world from a bigger perspective is. And then I look at what is spirituality and how we come to that. All of us have a spirituality and we all live it out, if we're conscious of it or not. And then I look at what is justice in the world and how we respond to things that aren't right and things that don't settle well with us. Then just take one example. I haven't decided what example I'm going to use yet, but it probably will be immigration as something that really causes us to look at how our laws are functioning for people who are struggling. I really started looking deeply at what is spirituality in a very conscious way when I was working at the UN. And I worked there for 10 years as an NGO, dealing with all the justice issues, the injustices in the world, and we were facing them. And almost every day there was another world crisis. Mm. And so, you know, we'd study it, we'd discuss it, you know, nobody can take on every issue. By the time you really get your feet sunk into how the UN functions, you know that you can only do one or two issues and really know them deeply. Mm. So we had a number of colleagues who were religious that function at the UN as well as NGOs, and so we would kind of tap each other's resources to say, what do I need to know about this issue, or what do I need to know about this issue? So, every day you'd hear another crisis, people being killed, wars breaking out. One of the primary focus I had was Iraq, because we have sisters in Iraq, and so I was really on the Iraq committee for a number of years, trying to look at what was happening from a global perspective. And I finally got to a point, it's like, I just can't do this anymore. It is too big, it is too hard to absorb this, deal with every issue, and do justice to it. And so I thought, well, I just need to leave. I'm burned out. And I didn't quite know what to do about that, because my heart hurt. You know, it was just so overwhelming. And I was living alone at the time, and I didn't have the skills to help me get through this. So I was I had just moved to the Bronx, and I thought, and I didn't know a soul. Mm-hmm. I started looking through the Fordham catalog, because I realized that Fordham was really close to where I was living. I thought, oh, maybe I could take a course. So I looked in the religious ed, and I had already had a doctor of ministry, so I didn't need any degrees or anything. But I thought, I just need somebody to help me think through how this whole way of being in justice really fit in my world. And there was a course by Dr. Janet Ruffing, and she had spoken to our chapter, and it was really a powerful experience. I didn't speak to her or anything, but I was really profoundly moved by her presentation. And she's a professor at Fordham. And so I looked into taking a course, and I was late in applying, and I also had an overseas program that I was going to, all of that. She wasn't really happy about my applying to this course, but she took me in, and her course really spoke to my heart about what is spirituality and how it fits. Well, the long and short of that, I ended up getting a certificate in spiritual direction, which just really helped me get in touch with who I was and what were my struggles, focusing on justice, working at the UN, and making those deep connections, how the presence of God interacts and is very present at the UN, which I didn't pay attention. I was just doing, trying to fix everything. I couldn't fix anything. And allowing that kind of spirituality, that flood of the Holy Spirit, just enter into my perspective. And that was extremely helpful to me. Mm. So I ended up staying 4 more years at the UN, and really having much more sense of peace of who I was. And so when I came here, I just thought maybe I could share that experience, because I know people who want to do justice and do justice very well often get burned out. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that would just share and help people understand and share their experience as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the phrase that kind of sticks out to me, is the burnout. Mm-hmm. And how long was it that you were working at the UN until you really were just like, I can't do it?
Well, we had a little theory of some of my colleagues that at 5-year period, people turn real bitter and critical and sarcastic and nasty. So it was probably, I went through that, and I was still really feeling crusty and cynical. And probably by my 6th year or so, it yeah. was like, I just have to do something.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I think that's a feeling that many, many people today, in any time, can resonate with, but especially today in 2017, politically, when there's a new crisis that we're hearing about, that we, you know, like flip over and look at our phone and see the breaking news about what horrible thing is happening in our country or around the world today. So, I mean, you spoke to how you found a spiritual basis to operate through, like a lens, it feels like, to operate through, to sustain yourself. So how does that help you remain hopeful and committed to the work?
I really let go of trying to fix everything, even though it seems like we're having a crisis every day in our country, is really believing how incredibly present our God is, particularly the Holy Spirit, moving us to speak up, to really look from a broader perspective, that I do believe that our news, kind of the media focuses on today and not even tomorrow, it's just like what's happening today and forgets about our history and doesn't look to the future. And just having a long perspective of realizing the Holy Spirit continues to be present and allowing people to be converted. We were sharing at our house the conversion of St. Paul, and look at how awful his life was, and then suddenly he got knocked off his horse. So that you really believe that people can change in a way that's very positive, and it's not really up to me to change that. I can, with my own limited way, I can speak the truth in whatever ways I can, but I don't have to fix it as much as I want it fixed. So.
Great. So it seems like one of the kind of unique values of being a part of the Catholic Church, but also the Dominican tradition, is that you have a 2,000-year history or an 800-year history that helps give you that long view of history. So when you're thinking about like remaining hopeful, you're not just looking in the present moment, but you're looking at a long tradition that lasts farther, much farther beyond your own particular place in history. And I wonder how that's that perspective, or how that's helped you keep perspective in your role in advocacy or spirituality today.
Very much. I think sometimes the Dominicans were not on the right side of what we would consider justice. And during the Inquisition, the Dominicans put Ignatius Loyola in jail for heresy at one point. So it was, you know, what side really do we want to be on? I think, you know, yes, history really, really helps. But in addition to that, I don't do it by myself. We don't do justice in a vacuum. We do it together. And so it's with other Dominicans, but it's with other religious, it's with the laity, it's with the whole diverse group of people that we choose not to be isolated in our decision making, which hopefully is healthy for us to be fully present to a broader dimension of understanding, and we consult with lots and lots of people, lawyers, experts in the field, people who are experiencing the injustice, so that we're connected. Or, you know, if I know one of our sisters is working on a particular issue and living with people and, you know, doing ministry there, that really helps me to consult with how this is. It's not just one perspective. So belonging to a great big family of people worldwide, it really does help. And we're connected. We have the international justice representatives. We have a representative from the North America, and I was one of those for 3 years for the United States and Canada. But we come together and we identify the injustices that are happening in our world today and try to figure out how we can address those. And so it has just a real strong statement, but it also has actions of how we're going to do it. But we also realize that in different parts of the country, those issues are lived out in a different way, like deportations. Or in the Midwest, we know there are deportations, but we're not on the on the borders. And so we collaborate with our colleagues who are on the borders who have to deal with physical issues, and yet we can support them because people from our area are being deported from here. So, but we know people. And it's, I guess, the key for me of being a Dominican, being a religious this day and age is I am bigger than myself as a part of this community. And it's not just our community here in Grand Rapids, but it's a worldwide community that's really focused on the same things that I believe. And that's what keeps me here. It's like, we do this together, and yes, I can influence, but it's not about me and not about what I accomplish. It's about what needs to be done here out of our shared spirituality, out of our shared beliefs, our shared commitments, that we can do something together that's much stronger than if I just write a letter. You know, I can do that, and that's fine, but it's much, much bigger and much broader. So, you know, just being with and having that perspective and knowing the context that we have of who we are much, much stronger together.
That feels like such a powerful, just you saying, you know, the feeling of being, I am bigger than myself. I'm, you know, a part of something much larger, is so radically alternative to the very individualistic culture that we have. And I feel like in a lot of ways, I mean, everything that you've just said, you know, connecting to a history, a complicated history, much bigger than our present moment, connecting to a global family outside of even our own local community, and being a part of that bigger picture is something that, as a person of the millennial generation, as someone who's disassociated from a lot of the religious traditions or the tradition that I came from in some ways, are the things that I'm lacking, that I'm looking. And so we're both a part of this group in Grand Rapids called Nuns and Nones, N-U-N-S and N-O-N-E-S. And I think that that was created a lot of ways out of that recognition that, out of myself personally, that I'm lacking things that I know the Dominican sisters are full of. And so I know for me, in that intergenerational space, I'm learning how to have a perspective outside of myself in a lot of ways. And so I wonder for you in that space, which consists of maybe on any given week 15 to 20 people, equally, I think, sisters, religious sisters, and younger unaffiliated people, millennials, what you get out of that space.
I just so enjoyed those conversations. I think I've done three. I missed one last week, but it is, first of all, understanding the search and the struggle that you're having, trying to make a connection. Trying to make a connection with other people that believe the same things that you're struggling with, or not necessarily believe, but are searching to believe. And I've been there, you know, different periods of my life of struggling. So, you know, in many ways, the millennials are being exactly what they need to be. I think you're exactly right in struggling with the traditional connections that we have, you know, it would be elementary school, high school classmates, and then going to college, and there's something that surrounds us. And this particular group, most of them are out of college, and you find yourself kind of alone, and that's a really, really scary place. I didn't have that just because I entered the community right after that. You know, and then shortly thereafter, they did take women right out of high school. They made them complete college first, which is, you know, that continued search. But you still have this bonding with classmates and interests, and you have mentors, and you have teachers, and you have people that you're kind of still in a protected environment. Mm-hmm. This experience of being on your own, which we highly value, is extremely lonely, painfully lacking in systems to support. Mm-hmm. And so what I love is this group is coming together to search and be with you on that. Mm-hmm. Not fixing it, mm-hmm. allowing you to be fully in that search of what is it that you're longing for.
Yeah, that's great. There are a few things I wanted to talk about. We're in our last 13 minutes that I would feel remiss if I didn't bring up. Being Catholic in 2017, I think there are two things that I want to talk about. One is Vatican II, and one is Pope Francis. Maybe let's go back in time first, over 50 years ago, to Vatican II. You joined... after Vatican II?
Right after the end of Vatican II, yes.
So what, you joined an institution or joined an order right as it was probably radically changing, right? Like taking off the habits. Mm-hmm. Can you share what that was like?
It was difficult and great in the same way. There was just a huge flood of energy and hope in the congregation as I entered, because all of the regulations and the rules that people had to practice, no meat on Friday, going to mass, all of those things that really kept people together in a society broke apart in a way. That doesn't mean that we didn't have any framework for our lives, but it was as... John the 23rd was described as opening the window to let fresh air in, to understand the basis of our beliefs, what really is important. And as Vatican II emerged, you know, as juniors and seniors in high school, we thought, the gospel's all about love, and we were preaching all about that, which we drove our professors crazy, but we got it because we were really searching for that as we were growing. And so as I entered the congregation, things were shedding. A lot of the rules and regulations that had long, long tradition just kind of subsided. One of them was a habit. When I entered the novitiate, I was given the full habit down to the floor, and we wore white veils all during our novitiate. And as we were first professed, two of us made profession first in our class, and we wore the full habit, and the next day we put on civilian clothes. A couple of our other classmates, about a couple weeks later, made their profession in short habits with veils, and then the next day they took off their veils. So it was just kind of people who wanted to hold on to things and people didn't or weren't sure, you know. But the other piece is we didn't have any money to buy clothes. So we were surviving, you know, like the first years on $15 a month. Well, you can't buy a lot except some material. So we were sewing clothes, going to secondhand stores, and
that's such a symbolic gesture of, you know, removing the habits or taking off the uniform that was given and hand making your clothes
right.
from there.
That's right.
Kind of creating it collectively, probably as a process together.
Right, exchanging, yes. And so, but they were very interesting times because years of experimentation of how we lived in community. You know, we had lots of regulations for silence. Prior to Vatican II, those things were lifted, you know, and so, well, if you wanted to talk after 9 o'clock, you could. But it turns out everybody's pretty tired after 9 o'clock anyway, so it's not profound silence, but it continues to be a way of life of people. As Dominicans, we all study, you know, and we all do have private time in the evenings, and we all take our own prayer time. It used to be that we all would do our meditations together. Well, we all do our meditations probably in our rooms about the same time, you know, so it's not that unusual that there is some regularity in our lives, because that does give us a way to be productive, but it's not legislated. It's just the freedoms. But the other piece that's probably more significant is that after Vatican II, we had the opportunity to kind of spread our wings and to be freed up, to be fully adult women. And that was to go to school, to study the things that we really felt we were gifted in, to pursue different degrees, to be educated in different parts of the country, to live away from the community without, you know, exclaustration or anything, but to learn about different communities. I was sharing with you that I went to Boston College. It was the first time I was away from the community. It was like, I was so lonesome. But it really gave me the opportunity to learn about myself as a young adult, and to think and to study without anybody hovering over me. And we all had the opportunity for psychological counseling and deep prayer and retreats. And one of the things that was kind of legislated is learn to dialogue and learn to talk with people and learn how to live in community that wasn't with a superior and everybody were, you know, obedient, but to really learn to have decent conversations as mature people, one to one, that we are equal in this, and we each have rights, and sometimes we hurt each other by somebody being pushy or somebody just dominating ways, and you know, the challenges, and we have to keep reviewing those because we have new people coming in, we kind of forget what's going on. But to learn to live as fully adult women, which is very different than people being told what to do and kind of supervised.
I love that, because I think it's different than what people would have stereotyped about religious life and about Catholic sisters and what that's like. There's actually a lot of it's a liberating way of living your life, and that's everything I've heard from everyone I've met who's a Catholic sister. So, you know, over those 50 years, you've seen some of the rules shed, but also some of the rituals stick around. And right now we have Pope Francis, who it feels like has also opened the window and let fresh air into a tradition. Can you share what that's been like?
Well, clearly he's lived through the same kind of shifts that I was sharing with you. And he understands how renewal took place. And I'm sure that as a young Jesuit, he studied this and lived it in religious life and all of the ways that the Jesuits had come to renewal. And one of the more profound ways that the Jesuits have functioned, particularly after Vatican II, is in the justice area, of really understanding a perspective of the world and what's right and what's not right. And the Jesuits are all over the world as well. And so he has a perspective, especially living in Argentina, and he lived this way of being with people and understanding the suffering that people go through because of all kinds of different circumstances. So as he's called to leadership by his colleagues, he brings this he brings this perspective of understanding the world and knowing that there are continually emerging issues. And I have to say, one of the highlights is his whole encyclical on the environment, which just is incredible. And he knows he's not about himself. So I know that they consulted 800 scientists when this was being written, so that, you know, it just can't be from a religious point of view. It has to have a science grounding for it. And it took them over 2 years to get that written. So it's really, he really does bring a grounding and a deep understanding of world crises in the world, the injustices of the world, and he continues to address them. So we really are blessed to have him as our Pope in our lifetime.
Recently, Pope Francis gave a TED Talk. Did you see it?
No.
You should definitely watch it. But I feel like, you know, Laudato Si, the environmental encyclical, was written to a global audience. It had not only Christian language, but it had scientific language and spoke to the global community. Similarly, the TED Talk is speaking to a global community. Not only that, but the audience of TED, which is a more, you know, the technology world, the individualistic world. And anyways, I mean, I think Pope Francis sees the future of our world as bigger than the church. And we have 3 minutes, so maybe just in a closing question, where do you see the church's role moving forward in the future as the world feels like it's radically changing every day?
That's a great question. And kind of summarizes what I continue to feel is, what is the role of church in our world? And some people can dismiss it as just being superfluous and, you know, just having just religiosity, but it really does. The church is a huge function in the world, offering ways for young and old to have values that are consistent. It's not the authoritarian church that some of us experience, but it offers us the possibility of understanding what grace is and how we as humans can be with one another. We have all the tradition of Catholic social teaching. We have all the tradition of the presence in the church allowing people to be fully human. And I guess for me as a religious, I guess the question is, what is the role of religious life in the world as well? Expanding on your question is, how can we as contemplative women offer a perspective that provides a gift that allows people to understand their own gifts to be fully human, graced with the presence of God, as well as their own personal gifts, and, you know, that intermingling, as well as being in communion with one another.
That is such a beautiful note to end on. Thank you so much for sharing all of your wisdom and stories from 50 years and more.
Thanks, Katie. It's a pleasure to be with you. Yeah.